Welcome to Lock and Key Unlocked, a podcast about lock and key that is under lock and key right now. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about the second to last episode of Lock and Key titled Echoes. Oh, man. Echo.
This is scary, this title, because I know what that means.
Yeah, well, because you usually go into big hallways and you yell.
You're terrified of echoes, right, Pete? Because it sounds like someone's taking your words and yelling them back at you.
Only if it's near a well am I terrified, because wells creep me out. But no, because I know echoes mean shadow monsters and, you know.
Well, yep, I got to tell
that's
you.
True, always.
A tunnel is like a long sideways well.
Oh,
not as much water in it, I hope.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's the water coming to play there?
Yeah, hopefully not. So, as we said, we're going to talk about Lock and Key Echoes. This is written by Meredith Averill and Liz Fang, and it's directed by Vincenzo Natali. A couple of little notes about this, actually, before we get into the recap for the episode. So Vincenzo Natali directed a bunch of great movies. I believe he directed Cube. He definitely directed Splice, which is one of the most bonkers.
Are you talking about Gleaming the Cube?
No. I doubt it.
No, definitely not.
Cube, are you talking about splicing the cube?
Nope, I was talking about Splice and Cube. Splice is one of the more bonkers. What?
Do you mean Ice Cube?
Yeah. It was directed by Ice Cube. Thanks,
he directs Ice Cube.
Now I'm into it.
Vincenzo Natali actually worked with Joe Hill and Stephen King on In the Tall Grass, which was a Netflix movie.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
I think he also directed an episode of Creepshow, but I'm not 100% sure of that. So he's like legit horror director, directing the last two episodes of the show. The other thing, Meredith Averill is one of the EPs of the show as well. So obviously we're entering the end game here. This is a big deal. To do a little bit of recap before we get into it.
Penultimate.
Yes. That is my second favorite word to say.
Ooh. Oh,
let me guess your first one.
Yeah.
First
favorite. What is it?
Oreos. Top hat.
Yeah, top hat. You nailed it. So the Locke family has moved to Key House, a place in Matheson, Massachusetts, a house that is riddled with a bunch of magical keys. As they've lived there, they've slowly unraveled the mystery of their patriarch, Rendelock's death. They're not quite sure initially what happened to him. He was killed by a man named Sam Lesser, who broke into their house, who had a weird Omega tattoo on his wrist. Turns out he was working with an entity named Dodge, who lives in the well house outside of Key House. We find out a lot more about Dodge this episode. We know that Dodge is also Lucas, aka Lucas Caravaggio. We find out more about that as well. Lucas is staying
so funny,
with
Alex.
Nothing. Ellie Whedon, his old girlfriend from back in the day. Again, we find out a lot of this information this episode. Ellie has a son named Rufus, who has befriended Bodie Locke, the youngest member of the Locke family. Bodie is so older than Bodie is Kinsey. Kinsey is the middle child. She has gotten rid of her fear using a magical head key. And the oldest child is Tyler Locke. Tyler Locke has gone through a bit of a redemption of sorts recently, where he found out that it was not exactly his fault that his father died. He has embraced his destiny to be the new patriarch of the
hero's journey.
It's a real hero's journey. A couple of other things you should probably know about. Near Key House, there is a place called the Drowning Caves. At the bottom of the Drowning Caves is a weird glowing blue door that we know as the Black Door. We find that out this episode as well. The Black Door. I mean, that's the title of the episode.
Well, it's a mega door. It's a big giant.
Is this
going to
be one of those
symbol.
Things where we get really into it about terms?
No, I'm just...
Oh, that's fun.
You mean everyone's favorite part of the podcast?
So whatever, the glowy glow door is down there. Kinsey was initially very drawn to it. We also saw some memories from back in the day, thanks to a jar of memories from a tree that Kinsey and Tyler discovered. One that showed Rendell hitting his friend Lucas with a hammer, which they were very confused about. bunch more things you probably need to know about. But the other big one you probably need to know about is that last episode, Tyler discovered the Omega Key. He doesn't know what the Omega Key is yet, but he discovers the Omega Key in the ashes of his father. Dodge also figured out where the Omega Key was. That's the big thing that she slash he, being Lucas, is looking for, and figured it out thanks to the memories of one Aaron Voss, who used to hang out with Rendell and the Lucas back in the day. Last member you need to know about of the family is Nina Locke. Nina Locke is the mother of the family, and she has struck up a bit of a friendship with Detective Daniel Matuku, who is the local detective in Matheson. Again, find out a bit more about him and what's going on with him this episode. She also is an alcoholic. She has been struggling with alcoholism. She ended up going on a bender the last episode, saw the magic of Key House when she was on a bender. But as we find out towards the beginning of this episode, as usual, once you get back to normal as an adult, you can't quite see the magic that's going on.
That's right.
Fades once away. It's like a hangover.
Yeah, there's probably a couple more things you need to know, but that's more than enough recap. I never like the recap on these podcasts.
Wow. It's really, you're sort of the
events.
You're sort of the star of the recap section.
Oh, thanks, man. You know what?
It's
I
your
love
time to
being
shine.
Called a star. That's a fun thing for me.
Well, you are. You've
thanks,
always
man.
Been a star, and you're great at remembering things that you have to tell us.
I appreciate that. Let's
you guys have huge
jump
egos.
Into it, because we get a lot of recap right here at the beginning of the episode, and this fills in a lot of the pieces that we've been missing so far. So actually, before we get into it, I'm curious to hear from you guys. As mentioned before, I've watched ahead. I've seen the finale. I saw this episode already, but
I saw this episode too, which is why we're talking.
I also watched it.
I don't want to brag, but I watched this episode.
Very cocky about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I have not watched the finale, so.
Okay. Yeah. But how did this link up? How did this filling into the history fulfill your expectations?
I thought it was great. I mean, they said this even before the series came out. This was going to be like a little bit of a remix or a reshuffling of the stories from Lock and Key. And I think they did a great job of bringing us those the elements in a way like they've really recontextualized the whole series and been able to give us the story points we need in a different order that actually helps with understanding where everyone's coming from.
Yeah,
and
like
I love that.
Like a good remix, it takes the kind of things that you like about something and then adds a little freshness, you know, puts a little newness on it, gives it a little shine up. And I think it's really impressive how they took something that I was very protective of and took in a different direction that was fun and kind of opened things up and made it its own thing. So,
right. But sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, specifically about this episode in terms of the history of the things that are going on, like the linking up, we find out what's going on with Ellie, we find out with the well back in the day. Was that satisfying for you?
Yeah.
Great. Excellent. So we start 6 months ago.
Strong breakdown. Well, let me say one other thing.
Yeah.
Another difference that I think is really shown in this episode a lot is, in the comic series, the family, the Locke kids, are always together figuring stuff out. And this show, and the show, they're much more separated and sort of working separately to the same goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's well done here with Bodhi.
I was
going
to say, Bodhi puts a fucking end to that shit.
Well, and okay. I was going to say, we're actually taping this podcast in three separate locations, and it's the same sort of thing. We're three people trying to meet the same goal. We're the Locks.
That's right. We're the Locks. That.
Yeah, we should have called this podcast Got It On Lock.
And it's easy to break down which one of us is which.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we don't even need to say it.
Need to say it because obviously Pete's Bodhi, Alex
is
Kinsey,
Bodhi.
And I'm Tyler. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it.
Wait, why am I Kinsey?
Yeah, you're definitely Kinsey.
Wait, why am I Kinsey?
Because Kinsey's a little creepy and a little dark and a little, you know, a little weird.
And has nice beer and also
and
has two guys totally into him.
No. And I'm, wow. And I'm Tyler because my name's Justin Tyler.
Exactly.
That's the main thing. Okay, so 6 months ago, Ellie is letting students off a bus and she sees the news about Rendell dying, immediately calls Mark Cho, her friend back in the day. We find out, as I believe you suspected, Justin.
Predicted.
That, But yeah, you nailed it. That was Mark Cho. That was Ellie on the phone from the very first episode. She sees in the footage the Omega tattoo on Sam's wrist and immediately realizes that exactly what's going on. And we see Mark kill himself. So we get that loop back to the very first scene, which I think is great.
I love that reveal. It's interesting. He kills himself. Was he just assuming Ellie would do the same? Or was the secret keeper?
Yeah.
When you make it like a secret pact with people, and then you enact a protocol to be like, hey, listen, so-and-so just died, you know, you do the right thing and you set yourself on fire and blow up your whole house. I think that's the kind of pact that people make, you know.
Right. Talk about a raw deal.
If we ever fulfill the pact that we're doing, I'm going to blow up my whole house.
Yeah, you're the mark. Kinsey and the Mark.
Ooh, if I ever make it away from you guys, and then all of a sudden I get a phone call.
Yeah, Pete is the Bodhi and the fear monster.
Yeah. No, Pete's the well.
No, don't you dare.
Ironically, no, because you're so deep. You're so deep, Pete.
Fuck you.
And Eric, you're full of scary things. And people do throw coins in your mouth and make wishes. Yeah. So, actually, now that I think about it, Pete, you have a lot of qualities. Mm-hmm. Share a lot of qualities with the well.
Well, here we go. Then 3 months ago, Ellie and Rufus are talking about Key House. Coincidentally, there's a knock at the door and Lucas is there. Interesting thing I thought about this, that there wasn't exactly like link up between Lucas showing up at the door. Like they fed you the thing about Mark Cho, and I think a totally reasonable way. The thing with Lucas showing up at the door, they didn't really feed you, okay, this is Dodge after she got out of the well using the Anywhere key, killed the guy in France, got some new outfits, ate a bunch of stuff, and then she went to the house.
Yeah.
But so, I don't mind that, because, I mean, we've seen that. We know all of this information.
Yeah, and we don't have to.
The show treats us with the intelligence.
Yeah, we don't have to see her grocery shopping and picking stuff up and checking stuff off her list. Like, you know.
I mean, I don't know. I might appreciate some grocery shopping in this day and age. Just watch some people do it in a reasonable, calm manner.
Oh, man, you remember that? Oh, those are the good
old days. This podcast is age well. Go ahead.
Why didn't Lucas stock up on a bunch of toilet paper?
Yeah, right?
Could have made a bunch of money.
Doesn't he know what's happening?
So Ellie goes to Key House, goes down to the ping pong room again, another filling in the blanks here. She finds the Crown of Shadows over a light. How'd you feel about that one? Because you've been pretty hard, Justin, on where they've been hiding the keys.
It was the crown. It wasn't a key.
Yes. But it's still an important component hidden. And we learned that Mark Cho hid everything. And he must have done it in a real fucking hurry, because he was just like, shadows, light, perfect. I don't need to think about this. I'm going to kill myself in a bunch of years.
Yeah, it's pretty well hidden, though, which I'll give him credit for. That's pretty well hidden, where it was hidden.
No, that's hidden. Like, that's where you hide, like, something you don't want a kid to get. This is a magical item.
My kids, in their room, they have a laundry basket on the other side of the door. And my son really likes to take all of his clothes when he's changing into his pajamas and throw them over the door. All the time, they get stuck on the top of the door, and he kind of forgets that they're there until we're like, hey, you have, you know, five pairs of pants on top of the door. That's basically what Mark Cho did.
Wow.
No, that's a crazy story that I don't even know.
Wait, you're going to bat for this crown hiding spot?
Yes, I thought it was a pretty good hiding spot, and Ellie was been looking. She knew something was in that basement and was looking
for
it.
She found it in like 2 minutes. She found it so fast.
She did.
That's not even a good hiding spot if you're playing hide and seek.
Oh, my God. You're just hiding it out of the way of normal people, but the people who are looking for it should be able to find it fast. I thought it was a good spot.
Ellie's the bad guy in this situation.
He should have left some clues. He should have been like, look for the Crown of Shadows in the neighborhood that is very heavily Jewish. And she would have been like, Crown Heights. Crown Heights. Oh, the crown is high up.
No, there's so many Jewish areas. You can't even say they're just big Crown Heights.
There's a very specific historic thing about Crown Heights and Jewish neighborhoods. So.
Sure.
Let me throw this out, Alex. I think that clue is too difficult. That would require a lot of guessing.
Oh, okay.
Especially if she was just hiding, if he was just hiding in the same spot where he ended up hiding it, which it could have been just like, go near a light bulb and look up. Yeah. Like you've done 1,000 times.
Well, anyway, she
you
does
change
find
that light bulb, you find the crown. It's over.
She does find it. Nina hears her because she knocks something over. She quickly switches out the crown for an action figure to say that she was looking for Lucas. I liked how they refilmed these scenes from Ellie's perspective, which I thought was nice. And Ellie gives Lucas the crown, but he says, no, it doesn't have the key. It doesn't work without the key. And gets furious at her, at which point Joe Ridgway takes a very funny picture through the door. His expression was kind of hilarious.
He was like, whoa, 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 that kid's way too young still. It was very funny, and it especially when we've liked this character throughout his appearances before he was killed. This was such a goofy way for him to go out.
Yeah, like just that all of a sudden there's this crazy shit going on, and then you hear someone's camera click, and you're like, oh, man. Old guy doesn't know how to use a phone to put it on silent so you don't hear the clicking noise.
I guarantee you he had that phone on selfie mode at that point.
Oh,
oh yeah. He just took a picture of himself.
Yeah, 100%.
He probably had it on like live. He took like 50 photos of himself in succession.
Oh, man.
And he died.
He was like, Nina, you got to see these sweet photos I took of myself.
Yeah. So Joe
it's
calls.
Crazy. They move and then freeze.
Yeah. You know, if I press my finger against them, they move, Nina. They're magic pictures like in the Harry Potter movies.
So, who needs keys? The phones are magic.
So Joe calls, but Lucas and Ellie are already there at their house. They've clearly used the Anywhere key. Ellie takes his phone, and then Lucas kills Joe anyway with a bag. This is awful. This is like.
Yeah.
Particularly in a show with all these magical keys, to see the bad guy just kill somebody by strangling them with a plastic bag is very hard to watch.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
it's,
such
that's why it's better to switch over to paper. Less people die that way, you know?
That's a great point. He could have clawed his way out of that paper bag.
Yeah. By the way, this is why I'm voting for you for comptroller again, Pete.
Honestly, so Pete, you are the best comptroller I've ever had the pleasure of living underneath.
Lucas leaves Ellie using the Anywhere key, leaves her behind, which is why she was there downstairs. It is
what
kind
an
of, yeah, I mean, it's kind of her fault though. Like she stood by and let it happen.
Sure did.
Yeah.
I will say that it does sort of feel like, can we talk a little bit about comic book spoilers here? Just because they happen at the same time. We've been kind of avoiding them.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay. So, in the comic book, some of Ellie's memories have been taken out, which is something that we don't see here. And that's part of the reason, using the head key, and that's part of the reason that she is so enthralled of Lucas and forced to do whatever Lucas wants. It isn't just abject fear of him. And I felt like that was missing a little bit.
Well, I think, one of the other things in the comic is she sort of serves him because she still loves him. And they're having a relationship in the comic.
Yeah.
And doesn't happen here, which I think is probably the right choice to not have her having sex
I
with
liked
a
it.
Kid.
Right.
Which is what happens in the comic. So I get it. But I think it makes sense for what happens later in the episode where she breaks his thrall, breaks his control. And,
well, I really liked what happened next because I went from being like, Ellie, what the fuck? You're just going to roll over on this fucking creepy dude. And the next scene, she bum rushes him with a gun and fills him full of lead. And then the classic, you can't kill an echo like that was fucking intense.
Totally classic. You can't kill an echo, no matter how many times you shoot it.
That's what I told my kids. Whenever my son throws his pants over door, I'm like, hey, can't kill an echo. And he's like,
I don't know why you let that slide in your house, Alvin.
Alex, this pants story feels like it's has a meaning that you haven't really defined here. Like
were
a metaphor.
The pants in the stories? Do you feel like you're the pants left in the corner, just hanging there?
Or the pants are your lost youth as you enter this phase of being a parent.
Right, and the door is age, and it only gets higher and bigger as it goes along.
Do you feel like doors always get bigger?
Do you feel like every pair of pants that's up there is just like a fuck you, Dad? You don't run my life.
We have he's only 5 years old, but he has started driving, and he just jumps in the car and he's like, "Whatever, I'm out of here, Dad."
Wow, does he roll his cigarettes up on his sleeve or?
Yeah, he has like a box of cigarettes in his sleeve, like a fucking 1950s musical person.
A box of cigarettes. Interesting, and he's not wearing pants, obviously, because they're all on the door.
Of course not. Yes, he has no pants. They're all stuck.
What a rebel. Wow. Rebel without a pair of pants, as they say.
I'm glad we're talking about this now. You know, before I was like, this story blows, but now I'm really into it.
Yeah, you're into it. Once we got to the box of cigs. One important detail is Lucas is reading Food Essence.
Yes.
The magazine.
Is that a real magazine?
No, but I think it's funny how much they give Dodge an interest in food. It's like an odd detail that Dodge just loves eating.
Well, I guess it's because he's a ghost and he doesn't eat anymore, so he's just kind of...
Yeah.
Right. So it just he has the essence of food?
But he could be really into, like, needlepoint. Ghosts can't needlepoint either.
Sure.
Know that.
I mean, if you're going to choose a magazine, Food Smells is the way to go. That's what I would say. Yeah.
Food Smells.
Food Smells. It's a scratch and sniff magazine.
Better than Body Smells.
Present day.
So as we mentioned, he doesn't die when he gets shot. He threatens Rufus. And then we cut to the present. Tyler and Kinsey are looking at the jar that they took from the tree. And
wait, one thing before we move on. I think it's interesting also the way that everything that happened with the Keeper of the Keys back in the day truly ruined their lives. Their lives were all destroyed by this.
Yeah.
Mark killed himself. Rendell was haunted by it before he ended up getting killed for this. Ellie is living in sort of her own hell here. And I think that's different than comics and sort of an interesting take on it, that these keys that our heroes are getting so caught up in and exploring, it has only done bad things to the people that have had them before.
Yeah. Well, I will say, and this is something that's similar to the comics, that they only touch on a very little bit in this episode. If anything, Ellie kind of brushes by it a little bit. They do say that they were trying to figure out some way to open the black door, to figure out a way that they could still use the keys past the enchantment of forgetting as adults. And if anything, that is probably their sin, their hubris that causes these things, I would say.
Yeah, and also they want to be young forever. They want to live in this time forever.
Yeah.
And that
who doesn't
is impossible.
Yeah. Do you really want to live forever? Forever
I would
young?
Live forever. I don't care about being young forever, though.
Oh, no. Being young forever, that's the way to do it. Don't be old forever.
How young?
I want to be old forever.
No way, man.
I want to just keep having thinner and
thinner
bones. I want
to be exactly this age. I am currently at my peak physical performance, and I'm very excited to keep on going.
If that's true, Alex, I have a lot of questions about your youth. You're like Mr. Glass.
So as we mentioned, the present, Tyler and Kinsey are looking at the jar. They realize that Dodge is someone else, but they haven't quite put all the clues together, at which point Bodhi helps them out. He's super pissed about not being able to help, gives a great speech.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Come on, let me help. Let me be part of this. I've
Stop
figured
shouting
out everything
me out.
So far.
Yeah.
And they show him the jar, and he immediately is like, oh, that's Lucas. That's Rufus's cousin. I know where he is. I know what's going on.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's so good that he was like, please include me. I'm helpful. And they were like, fine. And he's like, hey, here's an important, literally the key to the story.
Yes.
Get it? Key? Get it?
Now, in the next scene.
Wait, did you say that Tyler has hidden the Omega key?
Oh, no, I didn't.
So the Omega key is hidden, and I think only Tyler knows where it is.
Right. It's probably in the whale again, right?
That's smart. Sally. Yeah.
Sally the whale.
Sally. Chris stuffed animal.
Confusingly, based on the food essence discussion that we just had, the next scene finds Lucas eating probably a big plate of eggs, or at least pushing it around his plate, and he wants to know where the mega key is. He sends Ellie off. We get a quick scene of Nina looking at the urn. She's already forgotten the magic, but it's like scratching at the back of her brain. But she seems very quickly settled, very quickly past her whole alcoholic episode, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we get some, pardon the pun, echoes of it here. She, in a couple scenes, she empties her bottle into the down the sink. And it's a great moment where it seems like she might take a drink, and then she ultimately decides to pour it down, which is great. And then later, it connects her with Mutuku.
Yeah.
So she's still dealing with him.
She is. So let's see, where were we? So Bodhi rides over to Rufus's house. He skipped school, and he reveals to them, we have the same enemy. Please help me. Help me stop Dodge. Yeah. Help me stop Lucas. So Rufus shows Bodhi the Crown of Shadows. Bodhi kind of remembers where the key is, and he says, we're going to use it as a weapon against Dodge. So all the heroes are starting to get together here. And then we get a scene of
real quick. I love the height discrepancy between Bodhi and Rufus.
Oh my God. It's crazy. I mean, they're both funny. Great, but yeah, so different.
Yeah, so and that I think it's just another visual thing that would have never come out of the comic. Like it's such a show only thing, and it's just very cool. Yeah. Love how they lean into it because they're always showing them in a two shot together, and it's like they're like friends and equals, but wildly different.
Yeah, you know, just you want to think about that. Like the joy you get from seeing that would be like the joy I get to seeing Wolverine the right height on film. That would just be unbelievable, you know, nonstop enjoyment.
For those of you that don't know, Pete is a huge Wolverine fan, and he doesn't like Hugh Jackman, I think, as a person.
No,
because
come on.
He's too tall to play Wolverine.
I'm just saying, if they did some movie magic, really shot him so he was shorter than everybody, it's a key part of who Wolverine is.
What that's if they the got one a tall thing actor. In movie making. That's the one thing in movie making they never conquered, is having short actors with tall actors.
Yeah. What if they got a tall actor but like sawed him off at the knees?
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And I should note that I'm the tallest member of this podcast. So I think there's a little bit of anger in there.
Would you want to see Jackson Robert Scott, who plays Bodhi, as the new Wolverine, Pete? He seems about the right height.
Perfect. Yes. I think the girl who played X-23 is perfect. She should keep playing the role. I do want to say, though, that Rufus...
we should not get into this on our Lock and Key podcast, but you're annoyed that Hugh Jackman played Wolverine, was too tall. So your perfect choice for Wolverine is another character who is not Wolverine.
Yeah, but she's great. So my point...
I'm not disagreeing with you.
My it's point is... Rufus is such a well-casted character in a way that I didn't expect with the comic, you know? And, like, the fact, like Justin was saying, they're having so much fun with that and leaning into it. And it is just such a joy in this kind of, like, tense time. And, I just love... that's something that about the comic that they brought to the show. Like, the comic... took time to have little fun moments, little creative, cool things along the way. And this is doing such a great job of that. And I'm so happy about it.
Yeah. So then we get a scene I have a quick question about. So we cut in on Eden. She's getting dressed. Where is she? What is going on here?
I think she's at her home.
She's at her home?
I thought so.
I thought she was at her school because I thought they showed the front of the school. So is it like a dressing room from the theater?
You're right. I think Matheson is a boarding school, and I think she's a boarder there. And it's because I think the Locks are one of the few kids that don't board there.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that makes sense.
All right. That makes a lot more sense. So she looks out the window and sees Kinsey's Fear is out there, screams. She immediately is pissed at Kinsey, goes up to her, says she's annoyed at you and your Santorini squad, I think she says, needs to leave me alone, which is very fun. At which point, Kinsey goes out and she confronts Ellie and yells at her, says, why are you helping Lucas?
Yeah,
and
I liked how the scene went right at her.
Well, I like how the scene played out because this could have been a very simple, like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Ellie walks away, but there's a moment where Ellie stops and is like, I need to protect my family. And I like that. I like that turn.
Well, I think this show does a great job of constantly making you feel something for the villains, except for Dodge. But like Sam, we get in Sam's head. Ellie, same thing. Like, she's just a victim of her circumstance in a lot of ways. And This is a great way to make us sort of feel some sympathy, even though she's not being good when she's doing it.
Yeah. So Nina finds the booze. She dumps it out. There's a moment of doubt there, but she gets rid of it. I like that quick little scene as well. But then Logan, Eden, and Jackie confront Tyler and Kinsey. Tyler wants to bring in his friends on everything. Coincidentally, they show up at that exact moment, at which point the fear attacks Eden. There's a big fight scene. Logan knocks it away, and this brings the whole truth out. And I love this move at the end here, putting together like this new Keepers of the Keys, if you want to call it, new Scooby Squad, whatever it is. It's great.
I also
Scooby Squad is from a different program. They're the keepers of the keys.
Oh, okay. The Scoobies are from, of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, right. Famously.
So I really like the moment where Eden is flattered by the whole fear monster thing, and that was pretty cool.
And I love Kinsey's honesty. Like, my fear attacks what I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
And she's like, "You're afraid of me?" She's like, "You're intimidating." I love how honest that whole bit was.
Yeah. It's great.
One other thing I want to say, Tyler has the line, shutting people out isn't the answer, which I think is, he started the season shutting everyone out. And again, to keep beating the drum that I've been talking about a lot, is his journey this season has been going from that complete shutdown person to feeling absolved of the guilt. And now he can be everything. He's letting people in, forming his squad, getting his Voltron together.
Yeah, but thanks to Bodhi.
His Scooby Squad.
His famously, when they got the Scooby Squad all formed the hands and feet and head of this great robot that would fight things.
Wait, didn't
are you familiar
a dog?
With the Scooby Squad?
Wasn't like, they formed a dog, right? Like, Vilmet was like, and I'll be the foot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You guys are awful. That. This is awful. It's fucking Voltron, you assholes.
Yeah, let's go back to talking about how Wolverine is too tall.
Yep. Anyways, I just think that regardless of what stupid thing you're saying there, that like the fact that there was hesitation and like I'm glad that Jackie wasn't like, sure, this sounds completely insane. I'm completely on board. Like, I'm glad that there was a little bit of that, you know? Even though time's tight and this is episode 9 of 10, but I'm glad that there was a little bit of that.
Because she's sensible.
Yeah.
Yeah. One sort of stray observation while we're talking about random things. there's not enough Duncan this season. No Duncan.
He's off screen for a lot of the first couple of volumes of the comics,
I think,
as well.
I'm fine with that.
You're fine with that? Why?
Yeah. I mean,
no elaboration.
Why do you hate him?
Well, because he can't talk to the keys. He doesn't serve any purpose. His mind is wiped. Duncan, you had unfortunately you had a pass with this. Sit in the back. Bodhi's got control. Don't you worry. You just hang back there. Bodhi lets you know when it's over.
Would you like him better if his name was Crispy Lock instead of Duncan Lock?
Yeah, I would.
Interesting.
With a K.
Very specific reference there. Well, I just think he had such, looking at the show, but without thinking about the comic, he had such a presence in the first few episodes, and it felt like he was going to be their, a little bit of their Sherpa through some of this, and then he just slowly gets phased out, and then he's not even here.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Ah, you're ridiculous. Okay, so Ellie goes back to Key House. She sees the urn, drives back home immediately. She's already made a decision. I think based on the conversation with Kinsey, I would say she packs. She wants to leave town. Rufus tells Ellie about Bodhi. They hug. It's very sweet. At which point, Rufus reveals that he found the keys. Well, all right, let's keep powering through then. So Tyler tells Logan and Jackie about the keys. I was a little 50-50 about this bit, but they're like, if you got magic keys, prove it. And so he uses the matchstick key to burn a book, which on the plus side, I like the fact that it looked like they used practical effects to do this. On the downside, that's a trick that I've seen magicians do. So
what?
Well, it just felt like I would not be convinced that somebody had a magic key.
He had
the key.
And
demons exist based on that.
If I showed up at our show and lit a book on fire, you'd be like, bullshit, you're just a magician.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fuck you, that's just magic.
But Alex, I don't even know the three different parts of a magic trick.
Really? Well, what would you say? Do you know the third part of the magic trick?
I mean, I don't know if I had to just outstretch.
Oh, wait, I know. A clone of you has to die.
I think, no spoilers. I think the third part is the prestige.
And I just want to mention, again, Pete, slamming Hugh Jackman on this podcast. Calm down.
Let Hugh have a chance. No.
Well, anyway, he shows it. They're totally convinced, except for Jackie, who kind of runs off. Meanwhile, as we mentioned, Eden is getting fixed up by the nurse. Kinsey tells Eden the truth. Jackie, though, needs a minute. She leaves Tyler. Kinsey, at this point, talks to Scott and Gabe and is like, you know what?
Oh, my God.
I like both of you. You're both great guys. Why don't you both date me?
Kinsey,
suggests a little bit of a throuple.
Your confidence is a little too much right now.
It's called the throuple. Pete.
Yeah.
Thruple.
Sure.
It's
a thing that people do.
It's a totally normal thing, Pete. Everybody likes thruples.
I mean, hey, everybody gets to live their life, you know?
90% of all relationships are thruples.
I'm sorry. What was that percentage?
That's a fact.
What
90%.
Stats have you been reading?
Yeah. What was that?
Oh, Alex has a little drink, too.
I do. I have a Southern Tier IPA, if you must know.
Lovely. I'm having a French wine.
I'm having water because I'm a professional.
But what nation is your water from, Pete?
Fiji.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Very fancy.
Somebody's a fancy dad.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm
anyway.
Locked in here.
What do you think? Should Scott and Gabe both date Kinsey?
Pete, I mean, that's... No. That's definitely I don't have any fear or foresight to think that's going to work out because they're not going to get along. They couldn't even be in the same room together like an episode ago.
Yeah.
I also think it's interesting that this generation's keeper of the keys are Jackie, Logan, Eden, Gabe, Scott, and the Locks. That's a wild mix.
Yeah.
But I just feel like Scott... I feel like Scott should just point out, like, but Gabe is a douchebag and he only just started to recently become cool. Like, why are you lumping me in with this fucking guy?
I don't know. Well, we'll see what happens. Meanwhile, Nina goes to church for an AA meeting. She's about to turn around when she sees Daniel and they go to get coffee together. So again, perhaps a little romantic pairing happening there.
Yes, a little thruple.
I really like the detail on the sign, Friends of Bill. That's like shorthand code for AA meeting. Pretty cool that they put that in there like that.
Yeah. Do you think that Nina should date Daniel and Gabe or Daniel and Scott?
Or Daniel and coffee?
I don't know. There was a bunch of people at that meeting. It seems like she had her... You know.
Her pick.
By Alex's logic, they're all in thruples.
Yeah.
And that's pretty sound logic, I gotta say. So Ellie talks to Rufus and the Lock kids at this point, gathers them all together, tells them the story. Rendell became obsessed with opening the black door, so shades of Kinsey. Then Lucas got hit from something on the other side. She mentions that as they open the door, things fly out of the door, sort of like bullets, and Lucas
Golden bullets.
Yes.
Which is very cool, and only positive things happen when gold is around. Ellie at that point says, you know what, I'm going to show you what happened. She uses the head key to show Kinsey and Tyler, and in a very weird move, leaves Bodhi and Rufus behind.
Yeah, that was weird.
I mean, it ends up fine, basically.
I thought it was going to end up way worse. I was like, that's such a horror movie move to be like, oh, you two stay here to keep guard. You two children. You're the youngest, right? You guys don't know what you're doing. Yeah. Why don't you watch and make sure the murderer doesn't murder us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why I go inside my head.
So Ellie, I thought it was also interesting the way that Ellie's memories played out differently from some of the other memories. Like we've kind of seen this before, but it was so specifically going down to the ping pong room, seeing the memory. They were inside the memory at that point. So to me, that says that it's very visceral to her, that it was years before, but it happened in a very real way. Here we get to see Lucas going nuts, killing most of the keepers of the keys until Rendell hits him with a hammer to stop him. And Duncan's
devastating.
Duncan sees it happening, which is why they have to remove his memories. So again, filling in a lot of the pieces here. Yeah. And then the next morning, Rendell and Ellie threw everybody's bodies off the cliff, divided the keys, and covered it up as, oh, they drowned in the caves. So
yeah, very sad.
Yeah, that was a crazy reveal. It was just like, oh yeah, we just chucked the bodies over a cliff.
Yeah, it was very. We saw all that, the meticulous choices they made. It was very. It was much grislier than the story from the source.
Which explains when you get a phone call why you would set your self on fire and burn up, explode your house. That totally sums it up.
I'll tell you what, if I ever got a phone call, I would set myself on fire. Just text.
You keep saying
just
that.
Text.
You say that so many times.
Come on.
Oh, you don't. You want a text?
Yeah, I want a text. Don't give me a phone call. I'll set myself on fire.
You know, the phones are the real magic. The keys are bullshit. Phones are magic. Yeah. You can
the
text.
Phones are the third part, right? Right,
yeah,
Justin?
That's exactly right.
Oh, boy.
There we go. Anyway, so Ellie got the identity key and the echo key, which become very important later on, at which point Bodhi remembers where he left the Crown of Shadow key. I think this was the main utility reason why they left him behind, so that they could find the key ring that was in there. The Crown of Shadow key is just on the key ring.
It's on the key ring.
I got to say, that one I didn't mind.
Really? Cool. Why didn't you mind that one of all of them?
Because that's one where it feels
plain
like
sight.
Hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
At least it felt purposeful, as opposed to the other ones feel like just bad, poor choices.
Yeah.
This one feels purpose because there's another component, the crown, that you have to find.
Yeah. Lucas wants the anywhere key. Ellie hits her breaking point, goes to Wellhouse, uses the echo key, and calls back Lucas. And Lucas
creates Dodge, basically.
Yeah, creates Dodge. And as we very quickly find out, it brought back the demon, not Lucas at all. She blames herself because she broke the pact. But initially, at least, and I think
this
gets back
to... Yeah, it is your
fault,
Ali. You fucking made a pact with people. Oh. People died, and then you just got fucking lonely.
It happens. If the love of your life died, wouldn't you want to see them back at some point?
Sure, yeah, but if I made a pact with people and then a bunch of my friends died and we chucked them off cliffs.
Well, but I mean, then a bunch of years went by. And so it's like, oh, I have a magic key. Maybe I'll just go give it a shot.
Nope.
Yeah. In a moment of weakness, I can see that happening. She's a single mom working all the time. She's probably exhausted, not making the best decisions.
Sure.
Go to a well house, bring back a demon. It happens.
You don't go to creepy well houses.
You wouldn't. You would rather do the Mark Cho thing and be like, "Hey, I made a deal. I better burn myself up." Because Mark Cho could have easily gone back to Key House and helped shit out, or like hid the keys better, or something.
He already lived through that once, man. That's why he went out on his own terms. It was like, "Yo, listen, this shit's coming back around. Guess what? I'm gonna try to take as much information with me. I'm blowing all this shit up."
But it didn't work at all. It was a bad choice. It gave God Dodge so much more power because other kids had to figure everything out on their own. It was a stupid choice.
Well, he thought he was doing it to protect people, all right?
I don't know if this will help or hurt the argument, but I'll say the other day my son was throwing his pants over the door, and he was getting the pants stuck on the door, and there was like 10 pairs of pants stuck on the door, and I went down to a well, and I was like this close to summoning in a demon, like that close. It just wore on me. But
that was going to solve a demon to what? Get the pants down? I don't know what the issue here is. Because also, how's this kid getting so many pants on the door?
How does he have so many pants?
Yeah, what's the pants budget?
This is what I love about
doors,
man. They keep getting taller and I keep staying the same age. All right.
The Jeff Bezos of pants over here.
Did I get that right? Yeah, I think I got that quote.
You get pants. You get pants. Welcome to my family. You get 10 pairs of pants.
Well, anyway, so initially, though, what I was going to say is that Lucas seems actually pretty sweet towards Ellie when he initially comes back. He wants the anywhere key. He's very charming. He seems like the Lucas that she knows before. And I think that is the Lucas that shows up at her door, which is why she gets suckered into thinking he is for real back at this point.
Yeah.
But then back at Key House, They find out, they start to put all the clues together. They realize Lucas can be trapped in Well House. That's how they can get rid of him. And they're going to use the Crown of Shadows to force him back. And then they make, no insult to anybody, a very stupid mistake.
That, like, this plan that they come up with is awful. We've been away all day. We haven't seen Lucas all day. We'll just go back and take the things away from him, and he won't even be there. Of course he's going to be there. And you haven't been, Ellie, once have you haven't been able to stick up to Lucas. Why do you think this is going to work now? This is a horrible plan. You had a whole team of people, and you split up and go to the most dangerous place.
I agree with you. I think that actually the bigger problem is that they take the Crown of Shadows with them, which is such a weird choice to get the key instead of leaving it in a place that's safe.
Exactly.
Where they need to leave him back. Which, of course,
guarded at all times.
Yeah. So when they get back there, of course, Lucas sees Rufus and Ellie taking. They take the match. They take the Crown of Shadows key over to the house. He sees them taking the crown. Rufus attacks Lucas. He knocks out Rufus, takes the Crown of Shadows, puts the key in it, and then we get him saying, "Hello, darkness, my old friend," as we end the episode.
I love the way he changed that up and did like just the different way of saying it and made it even creepier. It was a real cool badass villain moment.
Yeah, it was good. And talk about a great setup for the last episode. Like, just...
I'm so scared.
We don't know what the Crown of Shadows is. We don't know what it does. We get a little hint at the end, but it's...
We know what it does and what it is.
We know, but like in the context of the show, we don't know, and that's exciting.
Yeah.
Also, using Billie Eilish. Wow, so topical, Lock and Key.
Yeah, kind of, I guess, back when it came out. Anyway, it is time to unlock our key moments. Let's talk about our key moments in the episode. Justin, why don't you go first with this one?
Don't take mine.
Oof.
Don't you do it. Don't.
We don't know. I mean, yours is going to be like Rufus doing something, probably, Pete. Right?
No, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want you to steal mine.
Well, go first then.
All right, great. Bodhi is the key, like always, but I think his, like, demanding not to be shut in led to Tyler also taking on this kind of mentality of, like, including people instead of excluding people, and that's the thing that they're still not realizing is that powers and numbers, when they're together, they can take down the bad guys, but if they split up, it's just, it's no bueno. So I felt like the key moment was Bodhi sticking up for himself that had a domino effect for other people sticking up for themselves. And
that's true.
And I feel like I still think Bodhi and Rufus to save the day.
Well, my key moment, I think, is the fact that Dodge's ability to just discard people is her weakness. And it happens again here with Ellie and Rufus, who Dodge never really cared to keep around at all anyway. And it's to have a weakness that strong and that visible, yet still not fully exposed, I think is really smart and hard to maintain. And I think this show does a great job of keeping Dodge powerful, but also like the hole in the armor is right there.
Go ahead, Pete.
I just wanted to say I'm also really surprised on the night at the end of the ninth episode how much still hasn't happened yet. And I'm kind of I'm worried about how much they're actually going to fit into this last episode and if it'll be enough.
We shall see. My key moment, I was waffling a little bit, but because so much great stuff happened. Waffles. Because so much great stuff happens with Ellie throughout this episode, but I think ultimately Tyler saying we need to tell our friends is the key moment to me, because I really am sucker for let's get the teen team together and all working together trope. And that we see that starting to happen in this episode is great and makes me very excited for what the show is going forward. Because as you mentioned, Justin, these kids have been so separate and on their own tracks and doing their own thing. To see them come together and all these disparate personalities, that's just going to be so much more fun as we get towards the final or ultimate top hat episode, whatever you want to call it.
Your favorite word.
Yes, top hat episode. Right at the end here. If you want to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Not currently directly to the internet, but regularly, depending on when you're listening. Hey, depending on when you're listening to this, either we're doing it at the Pit Loft, we're doing it to the internet, or society is over. One of the three things.
Oh, man.
Yes, but we'll be podcasting through it all.
Yes.
So as the seas rise up and the people start looting our podcast studio, we will be there talking about opinions and occasionally just really getting into the big issues like Wolverine that needs to be 2 inches shorter.
Yeah. Socially, Lock and Key Pod on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. To subscribe and listen to the show on iTunes, please leave us a comment. In particular, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And if you're going to pop it, remember to lock it.
Yep, classic sign-off.